to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. According to Bhagavad Gita, a sadhu, holy man, is a man in Krishna consciousness. A person may appear to be irreligious, but if he has the qualifications of Krishna consciousness, holy and fully, he is to be understood to be a sadhu. And duskritam applies to those who do not care for Krishna consciousness. Such miscreants, or duskritam, are described as foolish and the lowest of mankind, even though they may be decorated with mundane education, whereas a person who is 100% engaged in Krishna consciousness is accepted as a sadhu, even though such a person may be neither learned nor well-cultured.
Just imagine a person who's not particularly highly educated, may not be from a particularly aristocratic family or nation, may not have any money, may not be dressed very opulently, and he's out on a street corner and he's stopping people trying to sell books. This doesn't seem like a very respectable situation. He may even be dressed in Western dress, and the clothes that he's wearing may not even belong to him. They may be just, you know, that he's using those. He doesn't even consider them his. He has no money in the bank. So what is the position of such a person? And some people may even think he's a fanatic. Strange hairstyle. So, but here, Srila Prabhupada says that if he's in Krishna consciousness, he's to be considered a holy man, a sadhu. He's not to be considered. Whereas someone else who may have some other qualifications according to social considerations, if he's not engaged in Krishna consciousness, he's considered foolish and the lowest of mankind. Continue.
As far as the atheistic are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa.
Now, recently, today, there was... Now, they're saying that formerly, when this country was inaugurated, it was just Christians. Those were the only religions. So the founders of our country were primarily Christians, but they had a view, as some people say, that they wanted to accommodate all religions and all beliefs. This is what some... So some are interpreting the Constitution that now we have not only Christians, we have Jews, we have also Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, and we have a few others, agnostics and atheists. So they're considering they're all equal. Everybody should be given the freedom of religion or irreligion as they like. And they should be protected by the United States Constitution. But that's not exactly according to Krishna, because he says, if there are miscreants, then I'm going to annihilate them. He's not very pleased with that, the atheists and the agnostics.
The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease His unalloyed devotees who are always harassed by the demonic. The demon harasses the devotee, even though the latter may happen to be his kin. Although Prahlad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu,
He was nonetheless persecuted by his father. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kamsa, she and her husband Vasudev were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than kill Kamsa. But both were performed simultaneously. Therefore it is said here that to deliver the devotee and vanquish the demon miscreants, the Lord appears in different incarnations. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Krishnadas Kaviraj, the following verses, Madhya 20.263 through 264, summarize these principles of incarnation. What's the meter there in Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Srishti hetu jay murti prapanche avatare sei shvara murti avatara namadare maya tita paravyome sabara avastana vishve avatari dare avatara nama.
The avatar, or incarnation of Godhead, descends from the kingdom of God for material manifestation, and the particular form of the personality of Godhead who so descends is called an incarnation or avatar. Such incarnations are situated in the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. When they descend to the material creation, they assume the name avatar. There are various kinds of avatars, such as Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Leela avatars, Shaktyavesha avatars, Manvantara avatars, and Yuga avatars, all appearing on schedule all over the universe. But Lord Krishna is the primeval Lord, the fountainhead of all avatars. Lord Sri Krishna descends for the specific purpose of mitigating the anxieties of the pure devotees who are very anxious to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, the prime purpose of the Krishna avatar is to satisfy his unalloyed devotees. The Lord says that he incarnates himself in every millennium. This indicates that he incarnates also in the age of Kali, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The incarnation in the age of Kali is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who spread the worship of Krishna by the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy names, and spread Krishna consciousness throughout India. He predicted that this culture of Sankirtan would be broadcast all over the world, from town to town and village to village. Lord Chaitanya, as the incarnation of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is described secretly but not directly in the confidential parts of the revealed scriptures, such as the Upanishads, Mahabharata, and Bhagavatam. The devotees of the Lord Krishna are very much attracted by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. This avatar of the Lord does not kill the miscreants, but delivers them by his causeless mercy.
Any questions? Yes. Microphone.
Obviously, distributing books is not, even if it was mundane books, the world would not consider that to be irreligious activity. Here in the first part of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that a sadhu may appear to be irreligious. I was wondering, like, how would this be? A little bit of knowledge is like can be dangerous for a new devotee. You know, he might not understand correctly in this beginning stages, and he might think it's okay to do certain simple things because, you know, they say a little bit of knowledge is dangerous. But ordinarily, how does a sadhu be, you know, appear to be irreligious, you know, what would a devotee do, to look that way?
Well, like sometimes their idea of religion, they have a particular conception. They think that religion means that you help your neighbor material things. Sometimes I say, "Why? What are you doing for society?" They think that just chanting is really a waste of time. It's a waste of life. And they think that the devotees of the Lord are actually exploiting the people, and they're exploiting the government by not paying taxes, and they're exploiting the whole nation by not serving in the army, that they are being irreligious to their parents and their family by not taking care of them. They're basically vagabonds, complete useless people, and they would rather see them in another country. Sometimes they say, "Why don't you go to some other country?" They don't appreciate it. So, in their eyes, this person is, well, people come up to us sometimes and say, "You're going to hell, you're of the devil." So in their eyes, they consider that the devotees of Krishna are the most irreligious because they feel that they're worshipping idols. They're worthy of being killed even. Many religions in the world, it's considered a pious activity to kill a worshipper of idols. You didn't know that? He's been nicely sheltered in this little Midwestern region. There's some countries you can go, and we know about some of those countries. It's considered pious activity to annihilate. So they consider that the devotees of the Lord are irreligious, are working against God. So does that answer your question? Okay. Any other question? Let's go on.
Text 9, translation. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna.
Well, this means that one has to learn the science of Krishna consciousness. Part of the science is to understand the Lord's position. That when he comes, he's not forced to come by the laws of material nature. And that all of his past, all of his activities are transcendental. Who understands that? If you ask a scholar, what do you think about the pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill? What will he say? He'll say, yes, it's a nice fairy tale. Made up by probably some grandmother somewhere to tell her, she wanted to tell her children something nice. So she made up this nice story and somehow or other it stuck. So, to understand Krishna's appearance and activities, it may sound like an easy thing. All you have to do is understand and you can go back to Godhead. Yes, that's what Krishna says. You don't have to take birth again. But who's able to do that? Only one who's a devotee is able to understand. Okay, continue. Read the next text.
Text 10, translation.
We're going to read the next
being text. Freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me.
This means that there's some good advertisement. Many have achieved success by this process. And they've achieved transcendental love and the good qualities that go along with that. So it's not that sometimes people say it's a new cult. How can they say it's a new cult? They don't even understand. This is being spoken by Lord Krishna 5,000 years ago. Is that something new? Even most of the Western world, their history goes back a few thousand years. Maybe to the Greeks, 2500 or something like that. And then after that, it's almost prehistoric after 3,000 or 4,000 years. They think it's prehistoric. They have no information. But we have Mahabharat 5,000 years ago and speaking about so many things in the past. And then we have Ramayana 2,000,000 years ago speaking about so many things. So this is shocking to them. How is it possible that there could be books written 2,000,000 years ago? They were just cavemen. How can cavemen write? Maybe they were making some little squiggles on the rocks or something, but how could they write a book? What to speak of a book like Ramayana? Such an advanced, extraordinary treatise, speaking the highest culture, highest religion, highest philosophy, morality, science, everything, history. Other questions? Okay, continue. Next verse.
Text 11. Translation. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pita.
So, no one can claim that why did this thing happen to me? I didn't do anything wrong. I'm a good person. And now this bad thing happened. There's something wrong with the system. There's something wrong with God. No, you did plenty wrong to deserve exactly what you got, but you forgot. You had amnesia. Death is like amnesia. It's a good way to forget everything of the life. You die, and you go through some amnesia. You forget everything. Like a knock on the head. If you take a baseball bat and hit someone on the head enough times, isn't it, Vibhishan? Yeah? If you do that, would you do that? Anyway, if it's done, then the person will forget everything that he learned in his whole life. Isn't it? Here it is. Kevin, microphone.
You can get stressed out to the point of your breakers can just shut off. They call it a breakdown. You can have amnesia, and I know what that's about.
Yeah.
I don't know my name.
If one can lose his memory by stress or baseball bats, what to speak of death? Death wipes out the whole memory. So he's saying, what did I do to deserve this? Well, you don't remember what you did in your last life. Do you know what you did? Now you're getting some horrible thing is happening to you. You say, this is not fair. I'm a good man. Oh, but what did you do last time? Do you remember what you did? But in this life, in this world, it's very difficult for anyone to say, I'm a good man, even in this one life, because practically everyone has already done so many sinful things. He's already eaten so many animals. He's already done so many things.
We know that the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and the ahankara, carries the soul to the next gross body when one is obviously liberated. So this, the mind is still there. The subtle mind is always there until we get rid of it and go back to Godhead. So when we transfer to that other body, we take our mind with us, but the mind is the storehouse of all these impressions and all these, the whole dream that we're running in life, you know, through sleeping and being awake, this whole material dream and it's dreamful impressions that we have in our mind of doing different activities and different lifestyles. So I've never have understood how is it that the mind, if it changes bodies in the mind, if the mind would cease to travel to the next body, then yeah, it would definitely make sense.
Mind what?
If the mind would cease to travel to the next gross body, then it would definitely make sense that, you know, it's all forgotten. But if the same mind is here now and the same mind is my next body, why don't I not remember, you know? How is it that my mind just gets cleaned out or just...
Krishna says, sarvasya chaham haridhi sannivishto matakmiti yajnanam apovanam cha. I'm situated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So that forgetfulness is also His mercy. Just like when a person is having a difficult day, he looks forward to sleep like anything. Oh, I can forget about all these troubles for some time. And he wants to sleep as long as he can so he doesn't have to face the troubles. That forgetfulness is Krishna's mercy. All right, He lets him go to sleep. You can forget all about it. So when He puts the living entity in the body of a worm, the worm doesn't, he's not all stressed out about when he was a businessman. When he was competing with, you know, the Palmolive company, and you know, he forgets all about it. He doesn't have to worry about it. That's one of the benefits of being a worm. But, of course, there's disadvantages too. It's not so easy to think of Krishna in the body of a worm. So there's advantages and disadvantages according to what he deserves. Next text.
Text 12. Translation. Men in this world desire success in fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world.
The demigods are very efficient. They're doing their duties very well. If someone worships them, they get the results quickly. And that encourages the people. They want quick results. So they worship demigods, they get quick results, and they go on. They think this is working. The system works. I worship demigods and I get it. Just like even in Vrindavan, the gopis, the young coward girls, they were worshiping Goddess Katyayani. Because their parents told them that if you worship Goddess Katyayani, then you'll get a nice husband. So they said, well, we want a nice husband, Krishna. Each one of them said, I want Krishna. The other said, I want Krishna. Goddess Katyayani, I want Krishna. They all wanted Krishna. So Goddess Katyayani gave them Krishna. Same thing when Rukmini, before she was married, she went to a temple of Ambika, which is another name for Durga, and Goddess Katyayani. So she was doing the same thing. She was praying, my dear Goddess Ambika, please let Krishna be my husband. So Ambika arranged for her to have Krishna as her husband.
Oh, we are in male body. But if we have...
We are in what? Male body.
Yeah, and if we have desire Krishna to be our husband, God, this is good desire.
You want Krishna to be your husband? Very good desire,
because,
yes.
Because we are soul, what the soul is, prakriti.
Just like the personified Vedas, they wanted Lord Ramachandra to be their husband. But he told them, no, I cannot do that. But I will give you the benediction that when Krishna comes, you'll be born as gopis and you can have Krishna as your lover. Now, someone may ask, well, what did they do all that time? That was 2 million years ago. What did they do in between? Right? Did you ever think about that? I thought about that. Well, I have the answer. In the Garga Samhita, we find the answer to that question. So, the Lord, after they finish in the particular pastime they're in, at least this is what happened in the case of some devotees who wanted to be with Krishna. They were given the benediction they would be with Krishna, and in the meantime, they went to the heavenly planets for a while. Now, how long is it on the heavenly planets? Say, we're talking about 2 million years from the time of Lord Ramachandra till now. So if it's the ordinary heavenly planets, that means it's 180 times. So what is 2 million divided by 180? How many years? Well, let's see. 200. Let's say it was 200, all right, instead of 180, to give a general. And 2 million. So you knock off two zeros, so it'd be 200,000, 20,000. 20,000 years on the planets of the demigods. But that's, then there's other demigods, there's other planets where, higher planets, where it's much longer. The difference is much greater. Like Brahma's one day. Sahasra Yuga Paryanta Maharyad Brahma. One day is equal to 1,000 ages. 1,000 ages means 1,000 times 4,300,000 means 4,300,000,000 years is Brahma's 12 hours. So 4 billion, and if you divide that by 10, then it comes out 4 million. So it's a half hour on Brahma's planet. So these devotees, like the sages, they're sent, okay, you go for a little while, sometime, to the heavenly planets, and then you'll come and appear on planet Earth when Krishna comes. Any other questions? Next verse.
Text 13, translation. According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable.
People don't like this system. They don't like Krishna and they don't like this system. They don't like the system and they don't like Krishna. And they don't like Krishna and they don't like the system. Unfortunate situation. But actually this system is very good. Not liking the system is like not liking the way the body is organized. Could you organize a better body? Could you do it better? We have the arms and they work very nicely, isn't it? They can grab things, they can protect, they can do so much work. You know, they got these fingers. Imagine if they didn't have fingers. Imagine if they just had stubs. It wouldn't be so easy. Stubs. Computer work would be much more difficult. But they have nice fingers. You can use them for eating, for dancing, so many things. And the brain, it's all compact in one place with all the important, the eyes are right there. Imagine if the eyes were on the bottom of the feet. What if the eyes were there? It would be very painful to see things. You'd be walking on your eyes all the time. So this is a perfect design. Nobody has come up with a better design. Similarly, the same person, the same intelligent designer who created this body has created the system for managing society. And we reject it. We say, no, I don't like it. You're so foolish. You don't know how society is supposed to run. But don't be surprised, they also don't know how the body is supposed to be run. They put all the wrong things inside. They take all the wrong things outside. Right? They take intoxication, make their brains, you know, short circuit, become destroyed. They misuse it. So they misuse the physical body and they misuse the social body. They don't know how either the body is supposed to be used or the social body is supposed to be used. They don't know the purpose.
Speaking about misusing the body, I was wondering, many other world religions, especially Abrahamic religions, they...
What kind of religions?
Abrahamic, like Muslims, Jews, and Christians. They tend to think that, they believe that husbands and wives should have illicit sex regularly, that way that they won't cheat on each other. You know, it should be done, and it's wrong if you don't do it because they could cheat on each other, and it's a prevention to keep them from cheating on other people, like, you know. So I was just wondering if you speak something about that. Is that
for those who are not very spiritually advanced, that at least they should remain married and not have adultery. But if you study more carefully the Abrahamic religions, you'll find that those who are more advanced, they give up these things more and more. They reduce it. In fact, in our book, Brain Game, you'll also see that there is a concept of celibacy within Judaism, although it's not widely known. But some of the great Jewish saints, they were so absorbed in studying scriptures and serving God that they didn't have any interests, and they're held in the highest esteem. So it's not that everyone is encouraged to engage unrestrictedly. No, it's supposed to be limited. But it's, of course, better, even if one is not following perfectly, at least if he remains within his marriage, that's better. It's still not on the level of purity, but it's at least a little better. Still sinful, but it's not as sinful. Okay, next verse.
Text 14, translation. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruitive reactions of work.
Well, who's going to judge him? Who's going to judge Krishna? What do you think? Yamaraj? Yamaraj is afraid to death of Krishna. He's completely frightened to pieces when Krishna came there to look for his teacher's son. Yamaraj came out immediately. He just blew his conch shell. He didn't even have to knock on the door or anything. He blew his conch shell. Immediately, Yamaraj came out, folded hands. What can I do for you? Yes? Yeah. Microphone.
Gopis and Srimati Radharani, they can judge Krishna.
Let's go on.
Text 15. Translation. All the liberated souls in ancient times acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. Therefore, you should perform your duty following in their footsteps.
Here's an instruction by Krishna that we should be like these great saints of the past. That's our instruction. We should do as they have done. Narad Muni also preached like this to the sons of Daksha. So first he preached to the Haryashas, the first group of sons. And he convinced them to all become Vaishnavas. So they gave up all their karmakandiya activity and they became pure devotees. Then Daksha had another group of sons, and Narada preached to them that you should do the same as your brothers. And they did it. Shri Shri Gaurinitai Ki Jai, Shri Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.